Excellent. An ale for me. And for my officers. In fact, ales for everyone.
Oh. Turn backwards. Rick and work. And Will.
Oh, yes.
Hey, everyone. This is the Turn Backward podcast with myself, Richard, this man, Will.
Hello.
And this man, Rick.
Hello.
We're going to be talking about an episode of the animated series, but we don't know which one yet. We're going to randomly pick an episode based off of an app Will has on his phone.
Yeah. Well, actually, it's even more simple than that. I'm literally just going to Google a number between 1 and whatever the number of animated episodes.
22.
Okay.
And then Rick's going to work out what that episode is.
We're going to eliminate the Magics and Megas 2, though, because we've done that one previously.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But well, I if we want to talk about it.
No, yeah. No. So, yeah, we're going to, whatever episode we get, we're going to go with it. And then we're going to totally talk about it. Mm. See how that goes. In the past, we had a lot of fun talking about the Magics of Megas 2.
We did, actually.
It was a really nutty episode.
It was. It was quite awesome, though.
Yeah. And I think it's fair to say we haven't, between us, we probably haven't watched all of the animated series.
No, we haven't.
I've watched less than, I can count the number of episodes I've watched on my hand.
That's about the same amount of times as Janeway has been to two Vox Quarters.
Five.
Oh, nice callback to that. Yeah. So so let's do it. So I've literally just typed in a number between 1 and 22. I'm pressing go. Let's see what happens. Ooh, it's working. It's working. Okay, it's not right. Now this is live podcasting for you.
Even though it isn't, because you will have downloaded this as a recording.
Yeah. Ooh, it's 3.
3?
What does that give us, Rick?
One of our planets is missing.
Hooray! Oh, I like that idea. Great. Do any of you guys remember a film called One of Our Dinosaurs Is Missing?
I do. I remember. I like that film, but I do think that it doesn't get shown anymore because it is a bit racist.
Right. But yes, that's right. That's right.
Peter Ustinov plays a Chinese man.
Oh. Yeah,
and he goes on about wonton soup quite a lot.
Yeah, and he has some makeup and he does an accent, and it's just not, doesn't really wash these days. But when I was young, it used to be on TV, and I really liked that film. It's a knockabout nonsense comedy about stealing a dinosaur skeleton.
I have very really fond memories of that film, but now I do understand why you don't see it much anymore.
Yes,
so I don't know how to feel about it. I don't want to kind of like reject it, but I understand now why it isn't shown much.
Yeah, indeed. But hey, maybe one of our planets missing won't be racist.
It has a dinosaur that's kind of powered through London by an old timey steam lorry.
That is pretty awesome.
And that's my combination of dinosaurs,
right,
and steam engines.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't not like that.
Yeah, I understand that. But yeah, I've fingers crossed this episode won't be racist.
Yeah,
and it'll be maybe
watch
fun.
If you like the idea of One of Our Dinosaurs Is Missing, watch a film called The Titfield Thunderbolt, because that isn't racist.
Are you chuckling because of the
that's about it.
Actually, it was because of memory of the film.
It's not racist. It's just about a village that wants to save its railway line, and it does play fast and loose with alcoholism.
Right, yeah, it does.
Because
you made me watch that film a while ago.
Yeah, and one of the plot points is that they can sell alcohol whenever they want. They convince the rich landowner of the village to fund their project because he can drink whenever he wants on
right,
the train.
Because he's basically an alcoholic, so it would mean that he can have a drink at one point.
They steal someone's house, which is an old railway carriage, And they bribe him with alcohol too, I think. Yeah. But it's in the 50s when, like, World War One was 10 years down the line and people needed to drink to feel good about themselves after being annihilated.
A bit of an alcoholism was the last of people's
worries. Fair enough. It's fine. Yeah.
But anyway, back to the animated series.
This isn't our Ealing Comedies podcast.
No, let's pause this podcast. Let's watch One of Our Planets is Missing, and then let's come back to report our findings.
We will
see you. See you in a bit.
Starfleet Command has sent the Enterprise to investigate, as we are the only vessel in the vicinity of the phenomenon.
4 hours, 10 minutes, sir.
It's certain there'd be planet-wide panic.
Those mist out there are acting something like a macromorphase enzyme.
Listen to me. Listen to me.
What?
If we don't self-destruct now, all those people will die.
The cloud is alive.
So, we are back. We've watched One of Our Planets is Missing.
We have.
And now we're going to talk about what happened.
It wasn't racist.
Yeah, it wasn't. There wasn't one little bit of racism. Nice to see.
It's really, really different to Magics and Megas 2.
Yeah.
Because Magics and Megas 2 was like quite like, whoa, there's lots of crazy stuff. This was quite a quiet, reserved little adventure, I think, in comparison. It was a bottle show. It was all pretty much shipboard based, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was coherent.
It was quite a nice. I quite enjoyed it. It's quite a thoughtful little story.
It's about the Enterprise detects a big old space cloud that's heading towards, well, it's already eaten one planet.
Mm.
And it's heading towards Mantilles.
Wedge Antilles.
Wedge Mantilles. They know Governor Bob Wesley.
Yeah.
Previously appeared in The Ultimate Computer, I think.
Ah.
Commanding one of the other ships in the War Games.
Ah, cool. Nice knowledge. I didn't know that.
Now, Wedge Antilles has a population of 82 million.
Yep.
And they're all about to perish at the hands of a big old red space cloud
that eats planets.
Yeah.
The alien guy with the arm in his chest,
Arix.
Arix gets to say, "There are millions of people on that planet, or 22 million miles to Akana," something like that, right?
Yeah.
I would just like to advertise Rick is available for Arix impressions, so weddings, bar mitzvahs, children's parties, anything, really.
Why the hell not?
It's specific, but why wouldn't you want that?
And so the episode is kind of them trying to work out how to, well, try and stop this space cloud if they can.
So they end up penetrating the space cloud, being absorbed into it.
They get right inside it.
Yeah.
They show a map of the space cloud, and they say, this cloud has like anatomy almost. Mm. And there's a picture of it, and they say, where are we on this? And they kind of up its butt.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I kind of like that little map diagram thing they put on the screen. Is that supposed to resemble, kind of very vaguely, like a cross-section brain scan type
thing? It does
look
like a brain.
I think that maybe is an intentional thing. I don't know, because we picked this episode at random, so I've not researched it at all. But
it eats. It does eat.
That's the impression I got.
So, what goes in must come out.
So it's a big floating cloudy brain that eats planets. Well, no, it wasn't coming out. It was just expanding the cloud, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Maybe it doesn't need it. Maybe they didn't go up its butt. Maybe it's just in the, they're in it anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I quite like this episode. It kind of worked for me.
Because I like that ultimately this thing just sort of plows through space and it's going to start eating planets and endangering it. The Enterprise makes contact. Actually, this is a very Star Trek solution in that it's resolved by finding a way to make this contact and make this peaceful overture and talk to the intruder and gain an understanding with it.
There's a point where Kirk is thinking about trying to kill it, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think that seems to be their first approach. They look at whether a spread of photon torpedoes would take out the section that they believe to be the brain. But they decide that it won't. They don't have the power to do it. But then they decide that if they self-destruct the ship, they can do it. So the last part of the episode comes down to a sort of ticking clock scenario where...
Like an old-timey kind of... like
a very old-timey ticking clock, in that it's sort of, you know, it's like counters folding over and... yeah, so
I think that's the animated series, a very accurate representation of the old moving chronometer things that they did have in the original series.
Yeah.
Although you won't see them if you watch the remastered, because they completely digitised them.
Okay.
But yeah, that's definitely in the original filmed episodes, they had mechanical things where each number sort of whirred around.
Yeah.
But so they recreate that quite nicely.
Classics.
Yeah. So they're sort of then faced with a moral conundrum as well. Do they kill this living creature? Kirk very quickly decides, yeah, let's kill it.
Logic dictates the needs of the many.
Mm.
I mean, yeah, in terms of a numbers thing, you kind of have that thing. But then I suppose, actually, you could look at it the other way. You don't know how many of these clouds there are. This potentially could be the only one, in which case... you are protecting one planet of people versus wiping out an entire race. And then the numbers game turned on its head a little bit, isn't it?
And they don't know whether the cloud is one entity or is it, you know, like a collective, like the Borg.
Yeah, it's, you know, so different. It's so different to how we would constitute what a being is.
This is very much the thing of having the ticking clock, though. It's like we've got no time to explore these.
They have to make that decision.
Yeah, and we're kind of like, we have to have a contingency in place to save a planet full of people. But you know, it's kind of like they are open to how things are going to go, depending on their other efforts in terms of communication.
Yeah.
So
Baines is pretty against just killing the creature.
But he's also against like losing a planet full of millions of people. So.
True. Yeah. He's against everything.
Basically, Bones is there complaining and that stuff.
Yeah. He points out all of the problems.
Yeah. It's not helping.
Thanks, Bones.
To be honest, Kirk is someone who looks for solutions, not for problems.
Yeah.
Bones needs to get down to sick bay. That's where he's doing his work. Get someone up here who's going to like have some positive ideas. You know, going to help the situation.
We saw a brief shot of a character with a magnificent moustache.
Yeah, who was that guy?
Transporter room. I don't know if that's supposed to be Lieutenant Kyle, who, in fairness, sports a fairly awesome little musketeer beard in Star Trek II when you see him on board the Reliance. So maybe this was a bridge between Kyle's clean-shaven original series look and his fully on bearded Star Trek II look.
It would be nice if that was a plan that they had
I admire that you thought, even knew who that might be.
Yeah, indeed.
I just thought it was a moustache guy.
Like, we were like, look at that moustache dude.
It's weird, Kyle sort of accepted it traditionally as the transporter chief of the original Enterprise, even though I think he appeared doing the transport about 3 times in total.
Right.
He was hardly a chief of Brian, constant presence in the transporter room. But
in Next Gen, they had
probably because he did it more than once.
They had in Next Gen. They had in the first season of Next Gen. I think they had like a rolling roster of chief engineers because
they did.
They weren't sure who was going to it was going to be.
It's right, because Geordi was the pilot.
Yeah, I think they basically didn't set a chief engineer. And as it went on, I think they found actually chief engineer was a role they needed more in stories.
Yeah,
and whereas Geordi's pilot role was a little bit. Well, actually, we could give that to Wesley Crusher we've made an acting ensign and give Geordi something else to do.
Yeah. How many times is driving really important to the story in Next Gen? You know, and all that diplomacy. Yeah. How many times do they have to drive the ship really carefully?
Yeah.
So what did Geordi have
and
to
he was
do?
Crazy. He was crazy, Geordi, in that person.
Yeah. My hero.
Oh, yeah. So just look at the last outpost. Geordi's just saying good, crazy stuff. But, also, it's probably getting really awkward to explain to people. Yeah, the pilot's blind,
but he's got cool glasses.
Yeah,
and he's fine. He can see really well. So getting back to this episode.
Oh, the
animators. There's a good moral conundrum then there actually, and I think that works quite well, and that's really in keeping with the original series. Yeah. So Spock does a mind meld.
A mind touch,
yeah, that's what they call it.
Because he's sort of saying, oh, it has to be physical contact. So
but I can't go outside because,
space and that.
I'm slightly confused about it because the upshot is Spock comes up with this bizarre technobabble thing about routing the creep or using the ship's sensors to scan certain reactions and then translating that through the computer into like intelligible speech.
Mm. And Uhura says she can use the universal translator to do that.
But then Spock sits in a chair with his arms out, like he's after a hug or something.
Like a child.
Feels like that was a frame of animation they maybe just took from a different episode to save money.
I'm unsure if he is communicating back through the universal translator and somehow sending these impulses out, or he's using his mind touch. But in that case, why can't he receive through the mind touch if he can send? I don't understand that. Because he's done it before. He's actually managed to initiate a form of mind meld through a brick wall, well, a rock wall.
Yeah.
I think by any other name he does it when they're trapped in they're imprisoned in a cave and he manages to knock a guard out using a mind technique literally through a wall. So I kind of I'm not going to argue inconsistencies or anything. It's just
you should have tried to take away the creature's pain.
It just felt like a little just felt like a little bit of over unnecessary technobabble and stuff. And they're kind of like pick one or the other. Is he mind touching or are they using the computer to translate sort of synaptic scans or something? I don't know. You know, pick one. This way it's a confusing mishmash of two methods.
They have big old enzymes, super enzymes.
They look like popcorn.
Popcorn enzymes. Why they should get one of those on board, and then maybe Spock could have mind touched with the enzyme.
Some sort of physical link, I'm sure. It's minor stuff. The ultimate threat.
It is a trope, I think, where in Star Trek, where they find themselves in a nebula or something that they don't think is alive, and then it turns out it is.
Yeah,
I was going
to. I don't mind. I think that idea of that idea of beings that exist in that way is interesting.
Yeah,
I was going to say that I think there's a first series episode of Voyager called The Cloud.
Yes,
where there's very similar themes in that they initially think it's a nebula. I believe that's where we get the famous line, "There's coffee in that nebula."
Yes,
from. But in penetrating the nebula, Voyager realizes it's inadvertently damaged a life form, and then in the end they end up trying to repair. I think they use the phases to perform some sort of suture or something on the entity. So there's an element of that. In Voyager's case, the cloud wasn't actually destroy things. In this one, they have that. But it's that kind of thing, like the cloud didn't know it was destroying life, and so Enterprise makes an attempt to contact it and say, "Hang on, you can't do that." And the cloud's like, "Oh no, oops, didn't mean to do that."
For the cloud,
I do like
the planets
because
of
are
the
tasty
planets.
Because of the techno babble solution, the cloud uses the ship's computer voice to talk to them.
It does. I mean, to be fair, the cloud would have been voiced by Miguel Barra anyway. So.
Right. Yeah. Or Scotty.
Yes.
If it was going to be a dude cloud.
Dude cloud.
But yeah, they basically talk the cloud into stopping eating planets by showing it some weird stock footage of things on Earth.
I particularly
kids on a roller coaster.
Yeah.
And then there were some people running and a dog, but it was like the animation wasn't quite finished. They were kind of silhouettes. There was some blue.
It did look like the dog was chasing the two people.
Yeah,
maybe it was.
Why was there an absence of what the it was like
chasing
reverse silhouette
blue shadows or yeah. I wonder if they just that's good enough.
A cloud will understand what that means.
So they say, "Well, should we put like a face on those people and some features?" And I was like, "Nah, it's fine. It's on a screen. It's fine.
We can reuse some old Scooby-Doo footage."
Yes.
And but just take out the characters. They weren't.
So I guess, yeah, I don't get why the... I mean, the clown was pretty convinced by some kids on a roller coaster and then people being chased by a dog. I'm like, oh, okay, maybe I won't eat a planet then.
Maybe I'll just eat a planet where there's no these guys.
Yeah, if worlds can exist where dogs can chase people, what am I doing? What am I doing eating those worlds?
I'm going to go to that dog world, eat all the dogs, because clearly that's the problem in this
world. They look delicious.
Sorry, Alec.
He's fast asleep. My puppy is still with us in the room. So he did get a little bit animated as we watched the animated series.
He was barking at something.
Yeah.
Yeah, he'd start growling, didn't he? Isn't he upset?
I think it was the cloud. He's I think probably, he was upset by the idea.
Probably he was reminded of that Voyager episode.
Oh, maybe that.
To point out the similarities.
He's trying to tell us.
Yeah. Oh, look, we knew that. We were totally going to pick that up.
Yeah.
Have more faith in us.
Oh. It was. So this episode was way more coherent than maybe any other animated series episode.
Well, I haven't seen that many, but I find it interesting how radically different it was to Magix and Megas 2. I think there must be quite a diverse range of stories. There is a diverse range of stories in Star Trek. Over the years, they've covered a huge set of different tales in many different ways. But I quite like that the animated series isn't all like high five magic, crazy, in your face.
Yeah.
Stuff.
Yeah,
this felt like it could have been an original series.
It could have been. It was a good, fun, sort of quiet, reserved little episode.
Yeah.
In many ways. But yeah, I mean, actually, in terms of original series stuff, it would have been a good bottle episode. They would have saved a lot of money.
Yeah.
I think on that making that.
They wouldn't have had many effect shots of the cloud. They would have had one. And they would have used it.
Yeah, I mean, animation means you can do a lot more cloud effects.
Yeah.
The stock footage they could have shown could have had actual dogs and beagles.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah, they could have done that a lot easier.
I liked it. I thought it was alright.
Yeah.
It was a very Star Trek sort of tale, I thought, all in all. So, but yeah, it was quite interesting.
I want to see more, but I think I've said everything I can. It was an interesting episode.
It was.
Sometimes nebulas and big old space clouds can be living things. Just be careful.
I like the view of engineering we had in this episode.
Oh yeah, that was cool. When they were restarting, there's a bit where they get a piece of the space cloud's guts.
Yeah, because it's antimatter, and they needed that to
restart the reaction. Yeah.
Well, they established that the cloud is from outside of the galaxy because they find elements from that are not in the periodic table in that cloud, don't they?
Yeah.
But then it's antimatter a bit later on.
But antimatter isn't a specific element, is it? It's just
any
type of matter that's got a. I don't know how it is, but it's like the anti version.
The opposite,
you know.
Like positrons, they aren't antimatter, right? Because they're positively charged electrons. Is that right? They're the reverse of anything that's matter, right? Are they?
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know.
We're looking at you as the science expert.
Man. I don't know. I'm trying to rack my science brain.
Take
but
that
I
blue
don't...
uniform off.
They're the reverse of... Yeah, antimatter is the kind of opposite of anything that's regular matter. So, so regular matter, electrons have a negative charge. So a positron is an electron with a positive charge. So is that antimatter?
I don't think antimatter
would be an electron with a positive charge.
Okay, but isn't an electron with a positive charge a positron?
Well, I don't know. I think isn't antimatter still theoretical? I don't know if we've ever actually created
antimatter. No, they've made some,
antimatter.
Haven't they? But it doesn't exist very long because it contacts matter and then blows up.
Yeah.
We need to learn more about antimatter.
Yeah, we need to.
That is something.
Well, isn't there a thing like there should be? Like, they don't know. People don't. Scientists don't understand why matter is the matter that won out in the battle between matter and antimatter. But why did? Okay, like yeah. Anyway.
Well, see, we're randomly delving into scientific stuff that we don't really have very complete knowledge on.
We need a Scientologist.
So
we need a scientist.
We don't need a Scientologist. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, so they... Yeah, so they take some antimatter. Scotty says, well, we can't let it touch anything on the ship because the ship's made of regular matter.
It's Kirk. He's got a right planet.
Oh, that's it.
He's like, oh, I don't want any antimatter beamed on my ship.
Bring it aboard. If the antimatter touches the inside of the ship or any of us, we'll be blown to bits.
But you do realise your engines are partly fueled by antimatter and you regularly have huge amounts of it.
I still don't like it.
I think,
of course I realise that.
You do have plenty of facilities for safely containing antimatter. I think Scotty's probably got this, mate. I think it's okay.
But Scotty's really good with him. He sort of explains it to him.
Yeah, he calms him down.
They can use force fields.
He says, it's okay. Takes him aside, gives him an explanation, calms him all down.
Nurse Chapel comes up gives with some coffees or something for him, and then he's all right.
He gets a warm milk and he settles down.
Yeah.
So,
well,
it's fun when we do these episodes through the animated series. We do them at the end of the night when we've recorded a few podcasts. So I don't know if we're running out of steam or there's only so much we can say regarding a 30-minute episode.
Yeah, that probably we haven't researched or.
That's the other thing. Yes, we just watch it and we thought, I don't know. Maybe we just need a little time, more time to collect our thoughts or something, but.
I guess it's kind of, but like you were saying, it's a bottle episode, and it's not it's not over the top like the Magic Sabbath.
No, it's quite different to what I was expecting, really.
It's like, yeah, like, and like you were saying, it was, it's a story that could have been an original series episode in itself. So. Yeah, but it was cool to get the three-armed guy. He got a few lines.
Yeah, he got quite a few.
I like that.
20 million miles from the cloud, and so on.
I will say, I think there's a short thing that the Phase 2 fan series did, and they used a complete CGI Arrex.
Oh, cool.
And it looked amazing, with his third arm in out of his chest and everything. It's totally worth looking up. So.
Okay.
That would be an awesome cosplay.
Yeah. Well, Rick's settled for what he's coming to Destination Star Trek in next year.
No. I will definitely dress up.
He does not accept the challenge.
I don't know. Arrex might be a bit too much. I'd be a regular humanoid character, I think.
That could be a sweaty hot costume. It's maybe not what you want. Yeah, humans are less sweaty and hot costume-wise.
Well, I don't know. As a human who's quite sweaty and hot, I'm saying that
I'm not going to dress up as you for the Destination Star Trek. For that reason.
Oh, okay.
That would be really indulgent if we all dressed up as each other for Destination Star Trek. And really specific, no one would understand.
Yeah. We dressed up as Star Trek podcasters.
I'm dressed as the great and well-known podcaster, Rick Everson. Look at me. I'm Rick Everson. That's how you talk. In my mind.
Yeah, he's got me down to a T.
You're always saying that as well. Look at me. I'm Rick Everson.
Why do you look at me when you're talking about him? It's
well... So I can't look him in the eye when I'm doing an impression of him.
It's weird.
Because it's like if matter and antimatter touch.
His impression is so accurate. It's as if two of us exist in the same space, and if we make eye contact, boom! Universal annihilation.
We don't know who we are.
Don't assume I know anything. Least of all, who anyone is.
Oh, well, I can safely say this is the most bizarre night my puppy has ever witnessed. He's gone to sleep. He can't be doing with it. Oh, he's woken up.
He knew
I mentioned him.
Feels like we've reached a conclusion, doesn't it?
Of sorts.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
well, it's been good. It's been fun to...
It was a fun watch.
Yeah.
But maybe not an episode with a lot to talk about.
Not a silly enough episode.
I think Magic's and Megastu left a much bigger, more prominent impression on us.
Yeah.
That
doesn't mean that we don't like this episode as much. I think actually it's very, very Star Trek, and the communication with it and the sort of the building, this rapprochement with the thing, and it coming to understand another life form and what it's doing rather than just trying to destroy it.
Yeah.
These are very Star Trek approaches, and it could have been. It was a very effective show. So, possibly part of the problem is we went in this thinking we were in for another sort of, this is going to be batshit crazy.
Yeah.
And it wasn't. It was actually quite a well thought out, nice, thoughtful episode.
Mm.
So, it'd be interesting because I think we should continue this and keep looking at every so often doing these animated ones. Because, as you say, none of us have really watched them to any massive extent.
Mm. So it is like watching new Star Trek.
It is, in a way.
It's,
yeah.
It's rare that we're watching an episode we've not come across before.
It's a slice of Star Trek history that's a little bit out of context for me and a little bit out of place, and I need to maybe sort of insert that into my own headcanon a little bit.
Glad you said headcanon.
And get it all straightened out.
Yeah.
I think it would be good.
I know what you mean.
I'm planning on ignoring these. And I think once we watch them all, it will be then be interesting to see how we see them as a collection, and as a one entire artistic effort. The animated series as a whole.
There are funny shots in the animated series. Like sometimes there'll be a shot where you got like half Kirk's face.
Yeah, it's like really close up on his eye,
or like a hand going.
Yeah, yeah, but then,
and then just behind him, you see full body McCoy like doing a dance or something.
I wonder if maybe you get that close up on Kirk's eyes so that they don't have to animate his mouth moving. you see maybe his eyes moving occasionally, but maybe that's easier than doing a mouth.
This is something that I always think a lot of the things coming out about Discovery is like CBS are putting a lot of money into it, and they're like, some stuff has been a huge effort and a lot of work getting all that, but it's not, nothing is too big an effort because they really want to get this right and they want to put a lot of money and time and everything in. I just think, man, the history of Star Trek has so been about, like, you know, going and pulling out, like, polystyrene packing stuff out of the skip and painting it up to look like a weird ship interior and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, and look at Star Trek V.
Well,
that's about just did. Reusing. Yeah.
We looked very hard. We looked into the abyss and it stared back.
We liked it.
Yeah, it was good.
Nice.
Yeah, we reached a rapport. Yeah. Over Auburn and Beans. But so sometimes even the animated series that was hailed as the opportunity to do the most outlandish things you couldn't realise with like practical special effects, it's still like there's you can see the cost cutting measures in there.
Yeah, definitely.
So down to the fact that Majel Barrett and James Doohan do every other voice. So just save them actually hiring a guest star. But but then it's a tradition of Star Trek, isn't it?
It's tradition.
It's to I don't know what's the best term. I don't know, make do doesn't quite sound, but it's very inventive cheap. Use of resources.
Yeah.
Over the
years.
So.
Yeah, certainly. Certainly the movies would plunder whatever was going on with the TV series at the time.
Mm.
Use that. And like Star Trek V uses next gen corridors, and
they didn't even make great effort to disguise them, did they?
No. And actually, the next gen transporter room is used in Star Trek V. They're mentioned on the commentary. Mm. It's just. I don't think it's even redressed. It's just the transporter room.
But then in the next gen films, these Voyager sickbay.
Yeah. So. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, they're like, well,
I'm Voyager's doctor.
For this episode of Star Trek, the animated series, we've got this leftover footage from the Flintstones and this kind of haunted castle set from Scooby-Doo. So, yeah, that's a crazy planet, right? Haunted Stone Age world.
Yeah, let's put that together and churn something out. It's only got to be 20 minutes. 22 minutes.
It's good though. I liked it.
No, I think the story behind it was really solid.
Even the look of the animated series, I like it. Like
it's good. It's quite stylized and really, but it's very effective.
It's just a different way of looking at it.
I like the look of the
medium.
Yeah, I like the animated Enterprise. Mm. I think that looks good when it's.
And we did say actually when it started how much we liked the theme.
It's very upbeat.
Yeah.
Sound that the upbeat theme. It sounds like a show that would have a guest star this week, featuring I don't know, Farrah Fawcett Majors or or Lucille Ball, or someone like, you know, from the 70s, someone from the 70s. Dean Martin as the alien raconteur, Johnny Zardoz.
Oh.
I would love that.
I think Johnny Zarb Zarbdok should be your cosplay for next year, DST.
I might do that, probably. I got casinos on all the known worlds, and some you don't know about.
It's quite good. You can make any crazy stuff up, and people ask me who you are.
Alien Dean Martin would be cool.
Make everyone doubt their knowledge and think they've forgotten a character from a popular
episode.
You
don't know
who Johnny Zarbzop is?
You know.
Of course I do.
What a hell of an episode he was in. We'll back you up. We'll just bald-face lie to them and make them think they've forgotten an episode.
You know what? If he got me drunk enough, I would do Johnny Zarbzop.
How drunk is drunk enough? Is it one? Is it one beer?
I just need to lose a certain, the initial level of embarrassment. A pint.
Yeah.
Yeah. Basically, we'll waft a pack of wine gums under your nose.
Well, they've got gelatin in them.
Because
I'm vegetarian.
Oh, of course, sorry, yeah.
You can smell gelatin, though, right?
Yeah, I'm not going to be all about that, but still.
Okay.
Please don't.
Do they not do a variation of wine gums that are not... Why are we even talking about wine gums and gelatin?
I did. No, I didn't. No, you're looking at me and thinking about him again.
You brought it up.
Yeah,
no,
but
I didn't. He brought up
wine
gums.
Gelatin
for the audience who aren't watching this on the holodeck in the future, Rick brought it up as a completely adequate response.
One Rick brought it up.
But he can pretty much sit there and say that for an entire podcast.
Will often looks at me when he's talking about you.
I know. I guess he just thinks you're prettier than me.
You don't know what I'm thinking about. Yeah, something else entirely. My
dinner. Anyway,
so we diverged somewhat. Yeah, we're losing our we're losing the plot.
And maybe the will to live.
No,
we're okay. We're all right. We'll get through it.
But, I think that concludes our little foray into the animated series for this time.
Thanks for sticking with us.
Yeah, well, if you have, if you haven't. Doesn't matter, you're not listening to this bit by now.
But also, fair enough.
Yeah, don't blame you, I don't know what we were on about.
Right, we apologise. We'll be back soon with some more episodes. We don't know what we're going to do for the next theme wise. We're always open to suggestions. We've got a blank slate right now, so yeah.
The cloud has stopped, sir.
Comprehend, not desire to consume other beings.
Thank you so much for listening to our podcast. If you want to get in touch with us, our website is www.lowerdecksradio.co.uk. You can reach us on the Twitters at 10backward, 10 being the numbers 10 and backward being the word backward. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/10backwardpodcast. And you can also email us at crew@lowerdecksradio.co.uk. On a personal individual level, my Twitter is @nerdrick, and I believe you two also have Twitters.
I do. Mine is @WiltHerland.
Mine is @MrImhotep. MrImhotep.
So please do get in touch, give us any feedback or suggest new episode topics, anything like that.
Let's make sure that history never forgets the name.
10 backward?
Buddy, don't you think you should rephrase that?
10 backward. 10 backward.
I can rig a force field box that'll hold the piece of villi suspended in the center. Then I can take it into the antimatter nacelle, put it into the regenerating chamber, and release the force field by remote control.